all the clippings that we'll be having today, basically from this actual last week, so it gives some kind of an idea of what in fact is in the news here over in the UK for those of you in the US or elsewhere. If you look at the news earlier on in the week, about the only thing that was probably going on as far as the UK was concerned was to celebrate the rugby team. And it's interesting that you know, there apparently 750,000 people on Tuesday, on Monday I think it was, that went and celebrated the rugby team as they went through London in open top buses. But it's interesting that they've made such a big thing of this over this last few, well, it's ever since whenever it was that they actually won down in Australia. But they have really made an incredible thing of it, and it's indicative of the way that the country is going generally. Another thing that appeared today's paper actually was that Mick Jagger has received a knighthood, and in the newspaper today it talks about palace satisfaction for Sir Mick, despite Keith's moaning. It was a moment of pure satisfaction standing in the courtyard of Buckingham Palace in red socks and 148-pound trainers. Sir Mick Jagger let fly with a lot bit of attitude and all this kind of stuff. But there's another little article underneath, and it says, "I thought people got knighthoods for saving lives." And it is, really, that we have got things completely upside down. If you just turn over to Isaiah chapter 3, it's something that we need to be aware of, that it says in Isaiah 3, it says in verse 1, it says, "Behold, the Lord, the Eternal of hosts, takes away from Jerusalem and Judah the stay and the staff and the whole stay of bread and the whole stay of water." You know, you can apply that spiritually as well. "The mighty man," which obviously it is being applied spiritually when you go into verse 2, "the mighty man, the man of war, the judge, the prophet, the prudent, the ancient, the captain of 50, the honourable man, the counsellor and cunning artifactor, and the eloquent orator. And I will give children to be their, be their princes, and babes shall rule over them." Now, as I brought out before, the unfortunate thing of that verse is that it's talking about Judah and Jerusalem. And when we're looking at Isaiah, where it's talking about Zion, it's talking about the true church. Where it talks about Judah, Jerusalem, it tends to be talking about people that are, again, part of, or were part of, perhaps the true church. And it's really talking to us, that we are without the kind of leadership, which is unfortunate. But it's part of a section here in Isaiah. If you turn back to Isaiah chapter 1, in Isaiah chapter 1, because if you look at the various social trends that are going on in our nation, it's talking here in verse 3. It says, "The ox knows its owner and the ass its master's crib, but Israel doesn't know. My people do not consider." In other words, it's talking about Israel outside now. And it says, "Sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corrupt. They've forsaken the Eternal, they've provoked the Holy One of Israel, they've gone away backwards." And it goes on into verse 8, it says, "The daughter of Zion is left, as a cottage, as a vineyard, as a lodge in the garden of cucumbers, as a besieged city." In other words, the only righteous there are the people of God. "Except the Eternal of hosts had left us a very small remnant, we should have been as Sodom, and we should have been like Gomorrah." In other words, the whole society would have been wiped out completely. "Hear the word of the Eternal, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear to the law of God, you people of Gomorrah." And it goes on then, and the interesting thing is that when it comes into chapter 3, and it's talking there, as I mentioned, about Judah and Jerusalem, so the indication is it's not talking so much to Israel, it's talking more to Zion, or not to Zion, but Zion is the true church. But if you go down to verse 9, in this context it says, "The show of their countenance witnesses against them. They declare their sin as Sodom, they hide it not. Woe unto their soul, for they have rewarded evil of themselves." So this ideas of Sodom, which has been mentioned in chapter 1 regarding Israel, has overflowed now into Judah and Jerusalem in chapter 3, into a section that is about Judah and Jerusalem. And we need to ask ourselves, you know, are we in fact looking at the society that we live in, and do we look upon it as not that bad? Is it a bit of a laugh? Two things that appeared in the papers this last week. And Monday, there was an article here on Monday, and both of them actually were on Monday's paper. One of them said, only one of us can be the wife. And apparently, the gender recognition bill, affectionately known as the Gerbil, is being greeted with delight by most transsexual people. Providing it's approved by the House of Lords and survives the Commons, it will allow transsexuals sometime next year to obtain birth certificates in their acquired gender and then marry somebody of the opposite sex. But not all those affected are euphoric. And he then gives an example of this man who married this woman, had a sex change, and carried on living with this woman. So now they're going to be caught by this bill, because you can't have two women living together as husband and wife, so they can't actually be husband and wife. So you've got this absolute chaos within society. I mean, it's as deviant as you can almost go, but that is, again, Monday's paper. In the same paper, transvestite shocking pots claim victory in the Turner Prize. It says, Grayson Perry, a transvestite potter, with a strong line in pornographic and paedophilian imagery, won the Turner Prize yesterday. Perry, 43, accepted the £20,000 prize at a dinner at the Tate, Tate Britain, last night, dressed as a little girl frock with his blonde hair brushed up in the female alter ego of Claire. He's got a picture of this guy with his pots on the paper. But you know, it is just anything which is weird, anything that is twisted. But I want you to be aware that in Isaiah, it's talking to Israel initially. It talks about them as Sodom and Gomorrah. But when it goes into chapter 3, it's flowing into Judah and Jerusalem and how they're having the same kind of thing happening in their case. And it talks about them also as declaring their sin as Sodom. That although they're not Sodomites, they're not Sodom, but they're declaring their sin as, they're making no distinction between it. And we do need to make sure that we look at things the way God looks at things. We do our level best to stop what is happening out in this society and in this world from rubbing up off on us. Because we can think, oh, it's just a bit of a laugh, or it's. And I've had some people. I remember one child at SEP just talking about. There's a T-shirt that he had which was advocating bestiality, and he said, "Oh, it's a bit of a laugh." No, it's not. I'm sorry, it's not. And it was. This is something that we've got to be aware of, and we've got to be watching for. The kind of things that will happen, an interesting article here on, again today, it says the Wild West and East gets wilder. And as he's talking about America, it says it's only a short walk from the 7-Eleven shop in the Widing Trail in the Santa Monica Mountains before you come across the first red-rimmed sign, Beware Mountain Lions, Danger. Now all this ecology and the preservation of the natural habitat and so on is going to rebound according to prophecy. It says, in the jagged ridge of hills that marks the biggest of Los Angeles parklands, dogs are occasionally snatched from footpaths by wild animals and people warned not to let their children out of their sight. The tension between those who want wildlife back where it was before the white man arrived and those that have to live near it was vividly illustrated this week by incidents on opposite sides of America. And it then goes into these incidents about a bear and so on. But it's got a picture here of a bear rummaging through rubbish, and it says underneath, it says Americans are struggling to keep wild black bears, away from the fast food rubbish in the suburbs, and the animals will take any risk to grab an easy meal. Now, if we go back to Leviticus 26, in Leviticus 26, and I used this the other day, and I said, look, it can be used quite legitimately, although it's not specifically talking about that. It can be used to the Gentile nations, such as the terrorists that will be doing this, but it's also, and we've always used it in the past, in verse 22 of Leviticus 26, we've used it in the past as literal, I will also send wild beasts among you, which will rob you of your children, destroy your cattle, and make you few in number, and your highways shall be desolate. Now, when we're looking at the problems that will come on these nations, these animals are going to be part of the problem. It's going to be part of the difficulty that the nations of Israel will face. And it certainly talks about a third are going to be wiped out by pestilence, a third by war, and a third will be scattered into the nations, and a sword will be drawn after them in Ezekiel 5. But it was interesting, again, this is from the 9th, which would be Tuesday, and also from the 11th, which is Thursday. On the 9th it said, teen generation will be the world's sickest adults. It says, the present generation of children and teenagers will turn into the most obese and infertile adults in the history of mankind, doctors warned yesterday. It says, the drinking, eating, sexual, drug-taking and smoking habits of adolescents were creating a public health time bomb, they said, in a report called Adolescent Health, published yesterday by the British Medical Association. So that is a problem that is a time bomb, and when we're looking at the pestilences that will actually come, there will not be the resistance within the population. And we are looking at this time bomb. You know, these are all trends. These are things we've got to look at and be aware of what is actually happening. Another one, antidepressants do children more harm than good. Doctors were told yesterday not to give some of the most common antidepressants to children after a review found that their risks outweighed the benefits. And the new advice follows concerns that the drugs, part of a family of medicines called SSRIs, could trigger suicidal thoughts and do self-harm among teenagers. Now, okay, but if they are relying on such drugs to face life, what happens when the calamities do come onto our societies and the drugs are not available? You know, we do need to be aware that the real source of all our power, everything that we're going to have to put our faith in the future, is going to have to be in God. And that's the only place it is going to be the case. Interestingly, to give you a British view, it says prayer for most of us in this country, under a commentary about miserable sinners that we are, we'd sooner reach for the whiskey than venture a prayer. And it says prayer for most of us in this country now seems, if anything, a little odd, if not embarrassing. You've only got to visit, for example, the US Presidential Prayer Team website to feel your English eyebrows rising. It is an organization that claims to be 2.8 million strong and which prays every day via the internet for the well-being of the Bush administration and all its politics. And it goes into the various things that are on this website that people are asked to pray about. Now, this is obviously over in America. This is totally alien to the British mind. Utterly. I mean, the idea of a prayer site for prayers for Mr. Tony Blair is they'd be praying the opposite. They really would. It would just not go down here at all. And yet, in America, they don't have that same view. There is still a religious viewpoint there. But the interesting comment, I think, was that it says, praying for the American government, it turns out, could be full-time occupation. But why does all this strike us a little absurd? In the long historical perspective, of course, it's our radically secularized society that's the anomaly, not the Americans. Most societies at most times have been happy enough to bind together the idea of prayer with the most mundane business-like realities of life. And most of them still are. And now he gives an example, and again, this is the British mind of prayer. You know, what does Britain think about one prayer? Well, here he is. The Dalai Lama has said recently that putting the famous mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, whatever that means, I have no idea, on your hard disk drive will have exactly the same effect as a traditional water or wind-driven Buddhist prayer wheel. So he's trying to get people to type this thing out somewhere on their computer so it goes onto the hard disk drive and it's whirring around all the time. As the digital image spins around on your hard drive, it sends the peaceful prayer of compassion to all directions and purifies the area. Since a hard disk spins at about 4,500 revs a minute, that endless repeated prayer will soon rid the entire house or maybe even your whole street of any negative karma. Do it now. Is this mad? If it is, the English have been mad for most of their history. Repetitive restatements of formalized prayers were our habit for centuries. You see, again, they have no clue whatsoever, even about prayer. Nothing. Their idea of prayer is a mantra that you chant. You know, Our Father and all the rest of it, and, you know, Hail Mary, full of grace, and all this type of stuff that goes on in the Church of England and in those places. You know, at the same time, across the water from here in France, it says Muslim pupils face a ban on headscarves. Chirac will halt the spread of religious symbols in state schools. France must ban the wearing of Muslim headscarves at the nation's schools, a report commissioned by President Jacques Chirac recommended yesterday. It says the document added that other conspicuous religious symbols, such as Jewish skullcaps and large Christian crosses, should also be banned. Now, on the news last night, they said, well, okay, fine, but what about the Christmas tree that was standing outside the main French offices, you know? Why do they not ban that? And of course, they're not going to ban that. That's too much part of French society. But you need to be aware of what's happening over in the other side of the water and make sure that we are aware that this Europe that's rising is anything but purely secular. It's got a double standard. The traditional religions are being accepted, the traditional religion being Catholicism. Whereas when you come to anything which is minority and any outward show of religion, apart from, you know, the ordinary kind of Catholic view, you're looking at something which is very different. And it's eventually going to come to the point where we are going to be hated of all nations for my name's sake, and it's for standing up for what Christ, the Christ, stands up for. Now, when we're looking at Europe, it says there's a number of articles. I don't know whether you realise, those of you that are listening in, that there is in fact quite a heated discussion going on over in the continent at the moment. When we're looking at the constitution, really, of Europe being debated. Now, the EU prays for a miracle. This is one to end the deadlock. This is on Friday, it's yesterday. It says a miracle will be needed to break the deadlock over a new European constitution at this weekend summit in Brussels. Silvio Berlusconi, the Italian Prime Minister, said yesterday. And it says as mounting gloom engulfs EU leaders preparing for the marathon negotiations that begin today, that was Friday, Germany, France and Italy threatened to forge ahead with a vanguard of tightly integrated core states if there was no deal. Now that is significant. Jack Straw, the Foreign Secretary, said that he was not putting any money on the chance of agreement after Poland and Germany failed to resolve a bitter dispute over voting rights of the large EU. And the problem is that they've got so many nations in Europe today that they cannot effectively make any policy decisions. So they're going to have to do something about the voting rights. Britain wants to hang on to the veto, so that if anything it really doesn't want, it can veto it. They want to get rid of that. And what France and Germany want is they want some kind of a weighted voting system, whereby the larger nations have bigger clout than the smaller nations now. Smaller nations such as Spain and Poland don't want that at all. They want an equal footing with the bigger nations. It says Blair holds urgent talks to avoid EU slow lane. Tony Blair is to have emergency meetings with French and German counterparts as Paris and Berlin prepare to leave Britain in Europe's slow lane if it blocks a deal about the EU constitution. And that's one of them. Eurovote may be combined with a general election day. It says the Tories accuse the government of trying to blur the currency question, and on it goes. Old Europe banned from Iraqi aid contracts by Washington, that's another one. Wolf calls for a new constitution. It says a written constitution may be needed to protect judges and citizens from the government's disturbing legal changes, according to Lord Wolf, the Lord Chief Justice. England's most senior judge said that he was no longer sure that our present unwritten constitution would provide the necessary protection. Now, we don't have a constitution here in the UK. It's based on case law. The whole lot goes case law, which, you know, goes back ages, you know, thousands of years. He compares Lord Falconer, who holds the dual role of Lord Chancellor and Constitutional Secretary, to Stevenson's charter Dr. Jekyll and his evil counterpart Mr. Hyde. He says, unless you're an observer of the constitutional situation in Britain, you may not appreciate the dramatic scale of the change that was announced by, in a casual way, about the way in which things are going. Now, there are a number of points to bring out in this. First of all, let's just cut through it. The today's paper, there's a comment here in the actual editorial. It says, don't mention the superstate in Brussels. It says there's an elephant in the drawing room, and as the EU leaders work themselves up about voting weights, numbers of commissioners, other trifles, they're tiptoeing around the enormous fact that the document in front of them will transform the EU de facto and de jure into a single state. On the day the constitution enters into force, all previous treaties will be dissolved. The EU will cease to be an association of states bound together by international accords and instead become a single polity with its own jurisdiction, legal personality and constitution. It's the most important development in the EU's 47-year history, and yet no one wants to discuss it. That's the big issue. And it goes on, it says, few people are aware of the clauses that set out the extent of the EU's power. Quote, the Constitution shall have primacy over the laws of the member states, Article 10. Quote, the member states shall exercise their competence to the extent that the Union has not exercised or has decided to cease exercising its competence, Article 11. Quote, the member states shall coordinate their economic policies, Article 14. Quote, member states shall actively and unreservedly support the Union's common foreign and security policy, Article 15. So these are very, very broad, wide sweeping things that we have just been sidestepped because of all this toing and froing about waiting on voting rights. Now, if we turn over to Revelation 17, we must be aware where this is heading, and we therefore must be aware, as we see what's developing in Europe, the trends that indicate that it's going in that direction. Now, when we're looking at the present situation, you're looking at the states, the rights of the states are being given to this body, the EU. In addition to that, you're looking at the fact that they cannot have the voting rights of all the member states. They've got to cut it down in some way. In addition to that, you also have a European, president? The super president? The super president, isn't it? Or what do they actually term him? They're putting forward the super president. The president of the EU, but it's a kind of a lifelong post that in fact they're having. So that is crucial. And when you're looking at here in Revelation 17, verse 13, it talks about, verse 12, and the ten horns which you saw are ten kings that have received no kingdom as yet. Now, this was when it was first revealed to Mr. Armstrong back, I think it was in the 30s, 40s. But receive power as kings 1 hour, that's a very short time, with the beast. These have one mind and give their power and their strength to the beast, and they'll make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them. So it's an end time prophecy. There are going to be ten kings, ten kingdoms, or ten power blocks within whatever will be coming out of Europe. This Holy Roman Empire will consist of ten. Now, these things are significant, what is going on in Europe today, because you're looking at the inability of the EU to cope with the voting rights. And it therefore means that they're going to be having some kind of agreement whereby they cut down the voting rights, and they could well cut it down to 10 blocks. And if they do that, this then fits very, very readily. In addition, if you have this super president, you also have the potential for the beast. And you also have the actual constitution going through at the moment, which will give the legal framework to allow this that we see here in Revelation 17 to take place. So what's happening in Europe at the present time is very significant. We must make sure that we don't take our eyes off the ball in that regard. It's going to have an effect on the church. It's going to have an effect on the world as a whole in a dramatic way. And we are moving inexorably closer and closer to it. We don't need to be afraid of it, because it says, as it says here, the Lamb will overcome them because he's King of Kings. And it's those kings that he's going to be king of that we need to become. We need to be ready and trained as those teachers of the world tomorrow. That's the purpose of being here. That's the purpose of this tape that we're going to listen to today. But in looking at the news and what's happening around this earth, and particularly in Europe today, we need to be aware of that direction and not be bamboozled by what's going on, not be afraid of what's going on, but make sure at least we do watch what's going on.